You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Angel One. I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And the synopsis for this episode is, while Riker leads an away team to a female-dominated planet, a mysterious virus spreads among the Enterprise crew. This episode was first aired on the 25th of January, 1988. It was written by Patrick Barry and directed by Michael Rhodes. It guest stars Karen Montgomery as Beata, Sam Hennins as Ramsey, and Patricia McPherson as Ariel. So, what did we think about this episode? I think this one stinks, and I think I'm going to leave it at that. What about you, Lou?
So, those binars, I hope we can really get into how they function at such high speeds, so I'm looking forward to that.
Okay.
Oh, wait, you really seriously want to talk about Angel One, don't you?
Yes, you're confused. But by the way, just so that everyone knows, I rush back from work on a Friday. I travel across London for about an hour and a half or so, and I sit down. I'm having to handle kids going to sleep at 7. And Lou, you keep throwing curveballs, and my head's not in the right space to be able to handle this. It really isn't.
Okay. Well, then, okay, we'll talk about Angel One if we really have to. But, okay, well, here's you want to know what I think. Do you remember, I know I'm going to wrap your brain around this one again. Do you remember on our first episode when we ended it with, some problem, Lou? And I said, well, I was just hoping that, rest of the season one isn't this bad. And you said, yeah. Oh, no, some would be much worse.
Yes.
Well, here, why not everybody just take a listen to this? This is how it went.
Some problem, Lee?
Well, I'm just hoping that this isn't how bad the rest of the episodes for this season will be.
Oh, no, Lou. I'm sure some will be much worse. Let's see what's out there. Engage.
So that would bring us to the end of episode one of
Okay,
Connor.
And that's how that went. So, you're right, James. It's gotten much worse. That's what I think. And guess what? You're not going to have to tell me what we have to do next. I certainly want to do forums instead of talk about Angel One right now.
Right. Okay. I was nearly expecting you to find a wonderful gem within Angel One. Following on from a rather lively discussion about Code of Honor and a very detailed discussion about Justice. I thought that maybe this one I had missed something on the first watch, but no, this one's
actually this one, yes. Yep. There is something that you probably missed. I'm sure there's something I have written down that everybody probably missed, but yes, I did catch it. But okay. Anyway, forums.
It's forums.
Let's see. Jarek says, I've always enjoyed the show and the discussion, and while watching the episode of TNG in question before listening makes sense. My own schedule and time allotted for doing such is always biased towards audio podcasts, and I don't want to wait. Yeah, that makes sense. So if you've got time to watch the episode before you watch the review or listen to the review, that's always a good thing. But if you ain't got time, which would we rather they do, Doc?
Actually, to be honest, I think I think leave it up to the listener, really.
Yeah.
I found that sometimes I have listened to an episode review show, and I know that I wouldn't be able to get to watch the episode, and I've enjoyed what their thoughts are. And I mean, in my mind, I keep a lot of Trek relatively recent, mainly through my ludicrous amount of rewatching that goes on. So I tend to listen first, and then sometimes watch later. I know, you know, other people, if they're a bit rusty on this, might want to watch first and then you know, listen along. Either way is good.
Right. And, you know, I did say the big goodbye that Doc, you probably might not have heard it yet, but I did put an addendum on the front that said this was Brian's shipwreck trek, and so I thought maybe they should go ahead and listen to that show before they listen to our big goodbye to see what he said about it and then what we said about it. So, yeah, there are times I do say do something else before you come back to us. But as for now, let's march on, Mark.
Okay, so Mark posts on the forum. So this is Mark Stamper, To the Beam Up host. And he's actually a big Q fan, as you're about to find out. He said, as much as I'm a Q fan, I have to say that this is definitely the weakest Q episode in TNG. John Delancey gives a great performance, of course, but as you said, the episode is badly written and very clunky in places. You talked about Q's interest in humanity, and I have a theory on this, which I don't think I've shared on a podcast before, and it starts from this episode and ends with All Good Things. In this episode, Q tells Riker that maybe one day, eons from now, humans may evolve even beyond the Q themselves. In All Good Things, Q tells Picard he'll find out right at the end of the episode, when Picard asks him about Q's statement, that is the exploration that awaits you. Not studying stars and mapping nebulae, but charting the unknown possibilities of existence. Okay, so my theory is that Q are so interested in humanity because the Q are humanity. Eons from now, and this is one of the reasons why Q refers to humanity as a charred race. Anyway, great review. You guys are really finding your feet and have a great chemistry and balance. Hit me up. I'm a huge TNG fan, and I'm happy to appear whenever you want me in for a stinker of an episode. So thank you very much for that, Mark. And actually, Mark and I haven't discussed this theory or anything, but there's a bit right at the end of All Good Things, and I think it is specifically this scene that he's referencing, where, you know, the way that Q toys with Picard and the way that he tries to kind of enlighten him on various bits and pieces. And I've always interpreted that as, if not that the Q, we eventually become the Q, it's certainly that there's such a deep connection there between the Q and humanity that kind of goes beyond this idea of them just being antagonists. But that's my theory. I mean, we'll get to these, we'll get to the rest of the Q episodes in due course.
I guess a real interesting question would be, would we be like Q? Would we be like the Continuum the way they are, or would we be a kinder, gentler Q?
I think the Q come in too. I mean, there are two issues with Q, right? There's the issue of his powers, and, you know, there's a question as to whether or not those are like natural powers that they have, or whether it's just technology that they happen to have mastered. And personally, I've always interpreted as being it's being something about them rather than technology per se.
I was going to say that too, because since they can take each other's powers away, there has to be some Q somewhere who decides who gets what powers.
Yes, yeah, and I think this is I was listening to the To the Beam Up podcast, and they recently did The Squire of Gothos. And the impression you're given from that episode certainly is that it's the opposite in that case. It's technology that they're able to manipulate in order to control things. Whereas with the Q, I always felt that it was like an evolved state. But then, of course, you know, the question is, are we going to get to that state in terms of physical power? That's one question. But then the next question is, how does our society react to that? And do we just become juvenile and, you know, very selfish because of that situation? Anywho, we're rambling. So, do you want to read the last forum post, Lou?
Okay. It says, Captain Proton says, this is only the third worst Q episode, which isn't bad, I guess. Also, it was the least shown first season rerun, which did make me stop and watch it every time it came on. The title, obviously a play on the game Hide and Seek, which is saying Q likes to play games, but what game is he playing here? I'm not really sure. Keep chugging along, gents. Adios. Or he says adios, but I'll say adios. What game is he playing along? I don't know if he's really playing a game. I mean, it may seem like he's playing games, but I think more it's he's trying to teach humanity a lesson, just like what we're going to come up here shortly in the next season or so when we find something very, very nasty. You know, don't be so cocky and arrogant. You never know what's out here. I think that's what he's doing, and he's doing it through the games. Make sense?
No, makes sense here. Makes sense here.
Okay.
So, I think that about concludes our feedback. So, yeah, it's time to get cracking on.
Oh, for Andrew 1. Okay. Here's the deal, guys. We hate it. So, it's now time to give our rating for this episode on a scale of 1 to 5. With 1 being what this gets and 5 being something this will never see. James isn't going to let me get away with this. I know it. Okay.
I'm not. Actually, I mean, having said all of this, it, like, the first, like, 2 or 3 lines of dialogue starts out positive, right? We're trying to find some survivors from a freighter, and they are likely to be on a planet. And, you know, that's an okay teaser.
Sure, except for we don't see the freighter, we don't see the damage done, we don't see anything, so maybe they never really did the work. They're just kind of putting in the falsifying their log that, you know, we were checking in on the 7-year overdue freighter, Odin. Oh, darn. But no survivors, and there are some escape pods missing, and guess where they must have gone?
By the way, we've spoken about this many times, but once again, we are hitting a pre-warp civilization to screw with them.
Yes.
And I think it's Geordi that mentions, I mean, it might not mean Geordi, but they did mention that it's supposed to be a late 20th century, kind of like a, you know, technologically advanced society. So as soon as you're in that territory, so what are we doing down there? And if they're at that stage, they've got some pretty funky kind of like death machine devices, which I don't think we have these days. And so, I don't know, it's all over the place.
Oh, yes. Imagine if we could, you know, I don't know what your laws, if they, you have the death penalty in the UK, but here we have it, but it's just we're, you know, not man enough to use it. Is it the death? Some people want to bring back the firing squad, which I'd say there are certain crimes that could deserve the firing squad. But just imagine, pro or con, you can't say it's cruel and unusual punishment. They just, you know, you flick her off.
I mean, that's true. Here's something that I thought was really weird, and actually, this episode's guilty of it, and because it's a bad episode, maybe we'll have a go in this situation, but I think it applies to other episodes too. You're on a ship, right, and you come up to a planet, and for some reason, you have the ability to hail the planet and get the leader of the planet on the view screen.
Yes.
Almost at any time of day, and it's like, you know, Councillor Troy to, you know, to the elected one, and that's the equivalent of, you know, the head of the entire world saying, yes, Councillor Troy, we've been, you know, I'm happy to discuss this with you. Surely the elected one's going to be busy with things. She didn't seem a particularly busy, you know, busy president or, you know, overlord of the planet in any way.
Well then, why don't you contact the Queen and get her opinions on what we've done to her over the last couple of years?
I actually think that's, you know, I think you can do that. You can just phone up Buckingham Palace and you'll have the Queen on the phone immediately.
Yeah, that's right.
On Skype, indeed. It'll be a video chat.
That's right. Well, I don't know. I mean, if we can't get Obamacare website going, there's no way the White House is going to be up to speed. So,
and actually, something that tickled me, by the way, you know, they mentioned that they've made contact to this planet before, and they mentioned that it's supposed to be a female-dominated society. So Picard kind of says, "Hey, you know, Troy, would you like to get in? You know, would you like to be the person getting in touch?" So I have two problems with this. I would have thought maybe Yar would have been a better person to get in touch. I think she's probably more senior in terms of the position she holds, at least. But then also, the fact that Troy's a female shouldn't mean that she's the only person that can talk to a planet full of female leaders. It would be the equivalent of if you run into a planet full of black people, you have to get Geordi to do the conversation. It doesn't seem quite right.
It does. It doesn't, and it does. First, I have to correct you on one thing. Troy holds a rank of lieutenant commander, whereas Yar is just a lieutenant.
So yeah, that's true. That's
so
true.
She would be outranked. On the other hand, the difference is that if you were at a planet of black people, it would be different if they absolutely, positively, 100% hated white people. Because then, if you get some white guy on the screen, that's going to be taken pretty wrong. But then, if Geordi opens up this, then it would probably be different. Whereas these women just absolutely, positively can do without men completely. So therefore, instead of pissing them off, put a woman in command at the time and let them make the contact and open up the door. Because, you know, you didn't say it yet, but I'm going to. This was the most sexist episode I think I've ever seen in Star Trek ever. And it was just absolutely disgusting because of that. I am in no way – how many times have I said I love it when you have women in command? And maybe someday we'll have a woman president. I'm good with that. I now have two female bosses. I have had female bosses my entire life, working from the time I was 12 at my aunt and uncle's restaurant. So that's not the point. But if I was to say at home – I'm the IT guy for my family. Every time the computer breaks, they call me. And if I was to say, well, you know, I could fix it, I can't explain how I do because it's not anything a woman would understand. Well, that's not going to be looked at very well. And if I said it at work, I'd be looking for another job the next day. So this episode was just wrong for that reason.
It did seem strange because the elected one was – when they beamed down to discuss – you know, looking for their people. It, you know, first of all, yes, you are right. She was being, you know, completely sexist and dismissing, you know, the males and whatnot. But also, she did look extremely dodgy as well. It was very clear that something was going on. I mean, comically clear, right? It wasn't that there was anything. There was nothing subtle about this.
I just, you know, Mistress Beata. Let's see here. Karen Montgomery. I actually thought that was Terry Garr for a while, but thinking it was her until I got the name of it. But in the captain's log – oh, by the way, I've got a sore throat, so you're hearing a voice change. In the captain's log, he says that the women are taller, they're stronger, they're, you know, pretty much beefier than the men. And then we beam down and we see those tiny little arms on each woman. I'm thinking, wow, how are they the warrior with those tiny widow arms? And the men, the difference also is Picard talks about a revolt, not a revolt, but evolution of the men are going to someday want a equal piece of this pie. I'm looking at Trent saying, well, it's not going to be him. They're just content. Sometimes I think the men were overly content to let the women run their lives, and that leaves less for them to have to do.
No, I agree. I didn't feel that the society that they was being portrayed was in any way a reasonable society, the one that would have kind of naturally, you know, evolved into that point. So it's very, you know, it's very difficult to kind of buy into this as being a correct status quo. And then also when they talk about the survivors being dissidents and, you know, revolutionaries, it's very difficult to buy into that as well. So it's all bad, right? Is the episode any better at all for trying at least to have the switch between, you know, the women being superior to the men, or believing they're superior to the men, rather than a planet full of misogynists who believe they're superior to the women? Should any credit be given for having that switch, do you think?
Maybe a little. If it was... Okay, in other words, Picard is in command of the vessel. He's a man, but there's a woman somewhere in charge there. She's not inferior to him because he's a man. But they switched it around a little to an extreme where every man is completely inferior to every woman, and that's just the way it's always been, and they accept that. I think this switch was a little too hard. Could it be possible? Of course, it's absolutely possible. I suppose in some cultures, women are dominant. It's fine. Works for me. But I don't know. This was just too deep. And as I look through Memory Alpha, there was a little anger, including Patrick Stewart, who was a little upset about this and almost didn't even want to do it because of it was just so badly drawn and written out like that. It went overboard, I guess.
Okay, for something nearly completely different, you know that the painting, the shot that they use of the planet,
yeah,
is this the first time we see that shot?
Oh heck, no! We see that shot in so many different episodes of different series.
But I think this is the first time we see it because I know that that one turns up. That turns up for the next 15 years or so. I'm all the way, I'm sure, to the end of Voyager. But I'm under the impression that this is the first time we see it.
I think so, but yeah, I kind of thought when I saw that flash up there, I'm like, oh god, that looks so familiar, like we've seen that so many times.
We absolutely see it a lot.
I think it's that.
I mean, I think that, by the way, I've got a couple of notes here as well, because I think that, we've had some relatively decent performances by Brent Spiner over the last couple of weeks. I think in The Big Goodbye and in Data Law, and I think in this episode he gets written very, very, very poorly. He does his thing about, you know, given how long it's going to take them to get to the planet, and you know, 5 months, 2 hours, 16 minutes, 42 nanoseconds, that kind of stuff. And he doesn't know the word aphrodisiac.
Yeah.
Which, again, is very unlikely, and it's a little bit lazy, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is, and doesn't know what perfume is for. Did you notice the look on Troy and Riker's face when he spritzes himself with the perfume? It's, you know, one of, oh, God. Is he really that stupid that he doesn't know this? I don't know. Yeah, that was a little weird. But you want to hear something that I thought was interesting?
Go ahead.
I just noticed on this episode that I've never noticed before, and it's not the teaser I gave you earlier. That comes a little later. But do you ever look at all the men's sideburns, and they look the same? It's like the little pointy arrow.
Yeah.
And then you look at the women, and they've got the same thing.
I don't think I've noticed it on the women.
Yeah, I noticed it on Troy and Yar. I didn't look for Crusher, but it's like they all have that same sideburn look, and I thought that was very interesting. So that's one you have to look for.
Actually, talking about, maybe slightly getting ahead of ourselves, but talking about Crusher, I mean, we have a B plot in this episode, which is kind of face-palmingly stupid, right? Which is basically that a virus goes around the ship, causing people to be ill. It knocks them out, it knocks them out of action, but it doesn't look like it's life-threatening. So it's a slight worry, but not too much of a worry for anyone to do anything about it. We know we're in this situation where, you know, we might be called upon to do something very serious because of the us being so close to the neutral zone and whatnot. But at no point does Picard think it's a good idea to bring Data up to the ship when he's clearly going to be immune to whatever bug there is going around up there. But what we do have from Crusher, and we've criticized Crusher before for not acting soon enough to dismiss the captain when he's being taken over by aliens. But she does confine him to quarters when he has the cold.
Right.
So she's learning.
I call it the sizzle. Because, I think I have somewhere in my notes here, actually, that when something like when he rubs his neck, you hear that little sizzle sound. Not the same sizzle sound, but I still call it the sizzle. Let's talk about this virus. Where in the world did it come from? The holodeck? The holodeck created a virus?
No, I thought that they mentioned that Wesley picked it up from some type of expedition that they were on.
Yeah,
it's a while ago.
The ski trip in the holodeck.
Was it the ski? Really? That must have gone over my head. I thought that they mentioned they were off on a way mission or something. But I mean, you couldn't have picked it up from the holodeck, right? That's just stupid.
That's what I've got. I mean, Wesley and his friend, they obviously went skiing, and unless it was them and it was a previous one, they don't really mention. I thought they all went on the ski expedition. You know, the Night Blooming Thrognar from Kronos. I mean, that came out of the holodeck, unless... Because it was, as a matter of fact, it was on the snow itself as it hit Picard and Worf. That's how they got infected. It's that smell.
Yeah, I know that's how they got infected. I assumed that Wesley had sneezed on the snowboard just as before he threw it off camera.
Ah, possible. Everyone, tell us what you think about that. To me, it seems like the holodeck is what actually got him the virus, and that just drives me crazy. This is our third holodeck adventure, and the second one where it's gone bad. So we really need a computer refit. So I'm glad to get that soon.
We will be getting that soon. Now, what did you think about Riker wooing Beata down on the planet?
Oh, we're really jumping ahead.
Are we?
Yeah, I'm surprised at... what did he say? It's not our role to be, you know, to interfere in the domestic relations of planets we visit, and what the hell's he do? He gets interferes in her own domestic relation with him. Wow.
I've got the note saying that he, you know, Riker manages to squeeze himself into the, you know, the slinky outfit, the slinky kind of whatever that blue thing he is wearing, and I think that he does mention that, you know, in the interest of diplomatic relations, he will be remaining with Mistress Beata. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and by the way, that little tunic that he was in. I do not ever want to see Riker's chest hair again. Or Picard's, for that matter. Nasty. I don't know. Yeah, in the interest of diplomatic relations, I'll remain in the mistress's bed while you ladies do the easy work. You know, I'll do the, you know, the hard work here. So, anyway. Okay. Yeah, that was crazy there. But... Here, let me go back here. One, what do I have here? This, I think sometimes the writers do this, and it kind of is irritating. Angel One's strategic importance in this sector may become vital. Okay, so that's why, you know, you don't screw this up, number one. Why? So how is it important? Another unexplained. This world is important, and Starfleet is making us be here to our, you know, to behave ourselves while we are here, or we'll just have to, you know, find the. I don't know. I don't get why Angel One is so going to be so strategic. Do you really want them as a part of the Federation?
I don't think you want them as part of a Federation. And also, another question is that if it is so strategically important, then perhaps someone might have visited for the last 60 years.
Right.
Because they mentioned that they haven't had contact for... I mean, I think it's well over 60 years that they've, you know, that they've been away. So if it's a strategic outpost, right, you're going to have someone... Hey, you might even have an ambassador stationed there.
Right. Make it a woman.
You're going to have to make it a woman.
Put your best breast forward. Okay. You know, that's a play on put your best foot forward. Never mind. So, I'm just thinking, if Starfleet wants Angel One to become part of the Federation, look out, men, they're coming for your jobs. Did I just say that out loud?
And how does this planet get the name Angel One, right? I mean... Is it the Angel system and this is the first planet, or it seems rather out of nowhere? And also, all of the inhabitants refer to it as Angel One. And, I mean, we would never refer to our planet as Angel One. It seems to be only a designation that you could accept once you're as a part of, like, a greater Federation. So, you know, up until that point, surely everyone calls their own planet a variant of Earth or something. And then Angel One, it just sounds... It nearly sounds as bad as Haven the other week.
Well, I was thinking, you know, you're the scientist. If we wanted to give our planet a name and a number, would we be Terran 3, or what would we be? I know we're the third rock, so what would we be, the third?
Well, I think we would want it. I think we'd either be Terra 3, if the idea is that the solar system would be designated Terra, or it actually might be designated Sol. after the sun.
Okay.
So depending which way they chose that. So it could either be Sol 3 or Terra 3, I suppose.
Okay.
Because we later learned in the Deep Space Nine Mirror Universe episodes, they do refer to them as Terrans.
Yeah.
So I suppose diagnosis wise, we are down as like the Terran system.
So it will be Terran 3.
And I assume you'd count out from the sun rather than counting in from the outer edge.
Right.
So I think Terra 3 is reasonable.
Yeah. Okay, everyone. Welcome to Terran 3. Okay. So, you know, another thing I was thinking about when they were starting to transport down to Angel 1, I would not want to be a transporter chief. I don't know how O'Brien does it for so long. And you know why? Considering how fragile human life really is, and if the computer is off by one bit, what does he say? Consign him to oblivion? So, you know, I don't want to be responsible. That sounds like one stressful occupation.
I've always thought that the transporter is kind of so difficult, or it has to have so many safeguards, and it has to have such a difficult thing to do, that the operator surely is completely irrelevant, because it would either work, because it works perfectly at the quantum level, mm-hmm. or it doesn't, or at which point the guy's dead.
Right.
And having a good transporter chief surely doesn't do much.
Well, somebody's got to make the lights go up and down.
Yeah, I mean, so you need a big button to press, sure.
I wonder how long they're in transporter school for this. No, don't go from the down. Don't go from the bottom and go up. You have to go from the up. And it depends on if they're coming up or they're going down. That's when you'll... I like Scotty is better. You know, the levers go up and the levers come down. Although, Scotty, if you think about it, there were some times when he did the transporter, some levers were at different lengths, some were at different points in that, and he maintained them at that spot.
Yeah, it was almost as if it was like manual, kind of like manual configuration.
Right.
He was almost controlling the ride. Like, if you put one up too fast, you know, your head would be transported, but your body wouldn't. And then your legs would be left behind. So you had to be, you know, you had to be in sync, but sometimes not necessarily 100% in sync. You were compensating.
Well, if that's the case, and your head and your upper body show up before your legs, you just fall to the ground until your legs show up.
I think that's how it works.
Oh, I'd hate that. I'd hate that. Okay. So, anyway... Okay, and then so we were thinking about, I was thinking about, let's go back to the female-dominated society. The hunter, the soldier, larger and stronger than the male, but when you see the women, none of them look have any noticeable biceps. So does that mean when they go to war, is it to see who can out-crochet the other? I know that sounds politically incorrect, but this can't happen. Think about it. Assuming women on Angel 1 still give birth, how do the soldiers handle it when they're on maternity leave? Do the men just sit at home all day watching soap operas and baking chocolate chip cookies? Because if so, I'd like you to sign me up for this, please.
We never come across anyone where like the males give birth, right? I'm just trying to think whether that's something that is shown. I think it's usually that the females give birth. But then again, I mean, perhaps then the definition of a female is the, you know, the sex of the species that gives birth. So maybe it's just a, you know, self-fulfilling statement there.
I doubt that. And the reason why I say that would mean that the women have the men parts and the men have the women parts to give birth. If that was the case, I think we would have heard from across the room Riker screaming, "I ain't touching that!" So, get that away from me! Yeah, I mean, something like that, but that didn't happen.
Yes, I think that's true. That's true.
Plus, they look like a female, human female in every way from the waist up, and I'm sure Riker had his thoughts on those too, not to mention his hands. So, okay. Everything Deanna and Tasha said made perfect sense and is accepted warmly by Mistress Beata. But everything Riker says was just complete garbage. Even Riker starts to do the same thing. When Deanna and Tasha talk, Riker accepts what they say. But when Data asks What will they do if they deny the existence of the survivors? What does Riker do? Let's not look for problems. Just the last episode. Okay, just the last episode, Tasha asked a very important security question. How much can we trust Data? Well, let's not start thinking about bad Data. No, it was a very prudent question. So, why does Riker shut Data down? What if they deny the existence of survivors? I think that's something we should be concerned about in case they do. What are we going to do then?
Well, I think the issue there, right, is that the last episode you were dealing with Picard, and Picard's the captain, and he's a captain for a reason, whereas now we're dealing with Riker, and he's only first officer. So he's still learning.
Yeah.
Because I think you're right. I think it doesn't... A lot of this falls into Data just being badly written and being kind of, you know, a character that gets dismissed somewhat.
Right. Okay. How does the stimulation of olfactory nerves affect the enjoyment of sex? I'd say that's a good question because, you know, somewhat, I'm somewhat turned off by a woman who's wearing too much foo-foo juice. It's just kind of like, ugh. And especially when you have a guy come sit next to you and he smells like a French whorehouse. Ugh, I can't stand it.
These are all very valid points
that nobody really wants to hear.
Yes. I mean, we haven't mentioned the fact that what happens, you know, they obviously have to find the survivors of the crashed freighter, so they find an ingenious plan to, in order to, you know, find them, which basically goes along the lines of go up to the Enterprise and try to scan for a compound that they would have but wouldn't be on the planet. And they do this and they find the guys, you know, the survivors, or at least one of the survivors. And then they say, hey, we've come to rescue you. And he says, well, I don't really want to be rescued, thanks.
No, we were expecting you.
And indeed, they were expecting them. Mm-hmm. Because we later find out that it's Ariel, isn't it? I couldn't not think of the Little Mermaid during that bit. But Ariel, who's been a bit of a pain in the backside on the, I assume it's on the council, or on, you know, at least as part of the advisors to the elected one, she's been lobbying to not trust the Federation and not to follow through with, right, you know, what we're offering. And then it turns out that she's seeing this guy on the side.
Married to this guy on the side.
Indeed.
So, three questions were asked in a series of about a minute. First one was, are we to take these strangers at their word? Good question. Why? What would we possibly have to deceive you? Also a good question. Are there survivors on the Odin on Angel 1? Well, that's a stupid question. God, it had to come from a man, didn't it? Or how about, our library is just far too sophisticated for a man to understand. I swear, I wanted to punch her in the face.
And then also, because it's Data that goes up to use the library, Data kind of tries to appease her, saying, I'm not really a man. I've just got man bits. It doesn't count as being a man.
Well, he's wrong because he is fully functional.
He is fully functional, yes.
Okay. Yeah, and then we have Trent. You know, what to make of Trent? He's always smiling, and really, if you think about it, he might be strong. It looks like he can at least bench press a donut. Perhaps. Maybe not. Maybe he needs one of the ladies to help hold his donut while he takes a bite. Oh, God, that didn't sound good. All right. So let's see. Picard's sizzle has begun to, well, sizzle, and is being put to bed by Dr. Crusher, leaving LaForge in command of the ship. Okay, now, I like LaForge and all, but shouldn't the chief engineer be next in line?
Yes, or, I mean, as we mentioned at the beginning, or just, you know, beam up Data.
Yeah.
So that he's around. I mean, he's not going to be incapacitated by the virus, and yeah, you would have thought so, right? Because at this point, you know, LaForge is the helmsman.
Right. He's not an ensign, he's a lieutenant, but...
He's lieutenant junior grade. But you should be able to find, you know, it seems like downstairs in engineering there's at least half a dozen lieutenant commanders all vying for the chief engineer spot. So, you know, one of them must have some type of command experience.
Right. Okay. Can you think of anywhere in the last, 12 episodes, 13, where they used a site-to-site transport? Because if I remember correctly, back in the 80s, the Trekkies all went crazy about this idea of site-to-site transport, didn't we?
Yes, I think so. When's the first site-to-site transport? Site-to-site from the planet to into Ransom? So Ramsey's hideout.
Exactly. It was from the Great Hall. Which I also noted, Great Hall, doesn't that sound like a Klingon thing? But from the Great Hall to where Ramsey was hiding out. So I'm thinking in the old days, it would have to beam to the ship and then beam back down. But now with site-to-site transport, I thought for some reason, it's just one of those, I thought we were all crazy about the idea of site-to-site. And it took a lot of power. It couldn't be done very easily or something like that. I don't know.
I seem to remember that they made a big deal about it. I think in one of the episodes, it's kind of like integral to the plot that you have to do a site-to-site transport whilst on the ship, from one side of the ship to the other, and I can't remember when that happens. I think that was... it hasn't happened yet. Someone will know. Someone will know, and if they don't, we'll get to it soon.
Yeah, why don't you let us... Hope you guys are keeping notes of what we're asking you. Because I remember the beam us directly to sickbay was... It wasn't possible back in the day. They had to transport them up and then walk them to sickbay. Okay.
But even though it gets established that you can beam people directly to sickbay, sometimes people just don't, right?
Right.
For, in Code of Honor, they didn't. They got beamed up to the transporter room as... the person sitting there with the poison.
Yeah.
It depends on whether or not the set has been decorated as to whether or not you get beamed directly to sickbay that week.
That's a good point, because then I didn't note this, and I should have back then. She said, "She's growing cold!" Well, what do you mean she's growing cold? You just poked her 2 seconds ago. She's been sweating. She's been near these really bright, hot lights. Why is she growing cold already? But anyway, okay. The Klingon sneeze.
The only kind he knows.
Oh, and what a sneeze as well, right?
Yeah. The first one wasn't all that big. The second and the third one seemed to get louder each time.
I think that if I was at work and I was sneezing like that, they would send me home.
Yeah, right. Right. They can hear it 2 doors away.
Yeah.
So, more on the Prime Directive with his... We don't interfere in the domestic affairs. That's some Prime Directive stuff going on there. Does that mean that he probably shouldn't have coitus with her? Get that Big Bang Theory thing, coitus.
I'm pretty sure that that's the subclause 1 on the Prime Directive. Mm. Do not interfere with internal affairs. And Riker, that does mean taking the elected one into your bedroom at night.
Right. So maybe there's a Riker addendum to the Prime Directive.
Well, if there wasn't to begin with, there certainly should be, and there probably has been one amended after this episode.
Okay. Now, here's the mistake I was teasing you guys about 45 minutes ago, or something like that. Well, we have been on for a while.
Can we really talk about this episode longer than the episode takes?
It's amazing. Okay, here's the mistake. When they are on her bed and they're drinking their champagne or whatever they're drinking, Mistress Beata is putting her drink down and you can actually see a hand enter the frame and take it from her. And then she takes Riker's and puts that down, but you don't see the hand a second time. Boom! Freeze frame there, guys. You'll see the hand come into the shot and take it away.
And did you not think that her bedroom was quite close to her place of work? So it looked like she had a council chamber where she did all her official business.
Floozy.
And just off there, she had her bedroom.
Floozy.
Maybe it's the equivalent of the White House where you'd have, you wouldn't sleep too far away from the Oval Office. I don't know where the president sleeps, but...
Oh, I doubt he does his interviewing and his stuff right next to his bedroom. I think Michelle would be getting pissed. Shut up, Barack! I'm trying to go to sleep! Anyway, okay. Okay, Dr. Crusher has more sick than we do beds. So wasn't there in one of the series where they actually do a holographic program of a triage ward where, I mean, you could fit as many beds as you might possibly need? All our equipment could be brought to the holodeck, and even things could be replicated to actually be used.
But I think they mentioned that they used a holodeck here as overspill.
Really? Okay.
I missed that part. No, hang on. They don't. They said that they've confined them to quarters, I think. That was it.
Yeah.
So they've sent people to quarters, not into the holodeck. But maybe I was thinking that, you know, maybe they should send them to the holodeck. But also if you remember how big sick bay is, right? When Dr. Crusher says, "Hey, I've got more people than beds." What does that mean? Six, seven people?
Yeah.
She's not got that many beds. In complete fairness,
right? Okay. Well, anyway, let's go back to the Prime Directive thing. Riker's arguing about the death penalty to Mistress Beata about how the death penalty is a pretty bad thing. They're not Federation citizens, Ramsey and his group, so it's time for us to leave. Or we might as well visit every planet that has a death penalty and talk them out of that as well. But here's another thing. Ramsey and his men have families. They have wives. They have children. And obviously, Mistress Ariel was going to die with him. What about the children? Are they going to just be orphaned, or are they going to be adopted by the remaining people, or do the children die with them?
Oh. I can't imagine them killing the children. That would be nasty and horrible. So they must just end up being orphaned, I suppose.
Right.
And also remember here, we've got a president or, you know, a leader of the planet that is able to answer the phone to any ship that happens to go by and be on Skype immediately. She takes complete interest when these guys come down to say hello, and she doesn't have to be busy in any way, shape, or form. She's having relations with Riker most of the day, and she even finds time in her day to actually, you know, execute them there and there in her room. I mean, that's some hands-on management, right?
Right. Well, what was the episode where, you know, the woman's got this little control box and all she needs to do is put somebody on screen, press a button, and they die? That was some pretty wicked stuff there. The first Mirror Universe one.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
So, wouldn't you love to have that?
I think if they're not investing in it as we speak, that they're missing something.
Okay, so Riker decides they're going to take Ramsey and the group with them. The Prime Directive be damned. He'll do court-martial and allow these people to die, but nope, Crusher can't allow them to beam up. Why is that? Just beam them up. They're going to get sick. Yeah, that's fine, but they're all well. That means they have time to help you. Get them up. We'll deal with it later.
Yeah, I know that Riker specifically asks Crusher. He said, look, these people are going to be killed here, and then Crusher then says, well, they might die if they come up. But it sounded to me like they were replacing certain death with possible death.
Right.
And if you gave me the choice between certain death and possible death, I'd choose possible death. I think most sane people would, right?
Right.
You know, get yourself out of immediate threat, and then whatever happens with the illness that, you know, I don't think kills anyone, right?
Vase. The only thing that dies is a vase in this episode. I can't believe they did that. They killed a vase. You know, let's think about this. What did the vase ever hurt? Who did the vase ever hurt? Or is it a vase?
In my world, it'd be a vase.
Okay.
But I think it's you know, the vase had to die to show everyone else how serious the situation was.
Right, but Riker just watches the vase die. He doesn't try to interfere. Mistress, please. This vase never hurt anybody. I beg of you to spare its life. Nope, he dies. the reaffirmation of Angel One's moral imperative. Hey, I like that. I kind of like that. So there is something good about this episode. The reaffirmation of Angel One's moral imperative.
But did that go ahead or not?
No.
I thought the reaffirmation was connected to the execution part of the show.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they called it. I'm just saying I like that, the way they described it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, if you... we should require, you know, anyone sentenced to death, the president should stand up, you know, state that it's a reaffirmation of, you know, the uh-huh. the moral imperative
that's
of the
right.
of the nation, and you know, get a small little skinny boy to do his little buttony press thing.
Right. So let's go to Data calculated the exact time they had to leave orbit. How many of us at the first time fell for it when he said that we must leave in 48 minutes? And when Riker, he read that back, 48 minutes, Data changed it to, 47 minutes. RRR, 47. Get it, 47?
No, yeah, absolutely. but, I mean, I like Data being all innocent and stuff, but in this episode, I mean, when it gets so clunky, it does wind me up. I mean, having said that, Data does what's it? You know, Data does save the day in a way. He kind of hangs around, does the right thing.
Right.
I didn't think for a minute that he wouldn't, to be honest. I didn't think he would be, you know, it wasn't a surprise that Data did this. But it's, I suppose it's nice.
Yeah. Well, plus, one more thing. Bingo. Bingo?
Bingo?
He wouldn't know what she means by, I mean, he knows the game, the ancient Earth game, but he doesn't know bingo is a euphemism. I guess maybe he wouldn't know a lot of euphemisms. Maybe not.
I don't think it would be, by the way, I mean, just from a design perspective, I don't think it would be that difficult for, you know, for you to translate euphemisms and, you know, various other words and put it into Data's memory banks. And even things like, you know, don't and can't and stuff like that. It wouldn't be that difficult, right? Yeah. Right. Basically, you should do the following. You know, when you have can followed by not, say can't.
Right.
That's it. That's all you need.
You would think. You would think it would be that easy. Okay. Well, if you don't have anything else, I have one quick observation and then one thing. For a man, Riker can be very clever. That's what she says. Sure.
Yeah, but she gives no evidence of him being clever.
No.
Because right? I don't think he's clever in any way. I mean, unless this happened behind closed doors when they were getting numb to their business. Actually, one observation that I have, they tease us about the Romulans.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I think that the episode's so bad that it kind of takes any excitement out of the idea that the Romulans are coming back. So instead of me thinking, ooh, the Romulans might be coming, I'm sitting there thinking, ugh, really? Are the Romulans coming? I don't care. Get me out of this episode.
Maybe, except for one thing. If they had made this a two-parter, that we have a shot of the Romulan ship coming at us, and then do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and fade out. To be continued. Now that would have made it awesome. I would have given another point just for that if they'd gotten the Romulans. But no.
I mean, you know, nowadays when you know, obviously in the olden days, all of TNG and the original series and the rest of them were very much, you know, standalone episodes. It was, you know, serialized television. You don't, you didn't have the overarching stories. If you did have that now, wouldn't it be great to have a really, really poor episode, something like, you know, a Haven or a Code of Honor, but then kind of, you know, the last 10 minutes or so, you run into the Borg.
Right.
Or you run into the Romulans and it goes da 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 da, and then says, you know, come back next week.
Right, that would have been awesome. Okay, here's my last final observation. I don't know. Do you have anything else?
I am not. Okay. I'm out. I've been out for a while. I'm pretty sure.
Did even watch it, folks? Yeah, I'm sure you did. Okay, here's the ending shots. When the away team comes onto the bridge, Crusher hyposprays them. Why? They never had it. Nobody has it anymore. They've been cured. Why are so... They aren't affected. So does this mean that it's in the air forever? Does Barclay have to be hyposprayed when he comes aboard? Admiral Nachaev, so on?
I could argue that it's still going around, maybe. Maybe people have, you know, maybe people have put their hands on consoles and it's still alive for a 48-hour period, something like that.
Oh, get housekeeping to come clean it.
Yeah, that's what you need. And actually, it does remind me. I mean, a couple of years ago we had... Do you remember there was a swine flu epidemic?
Oh, yeah.
And everyone got very, very, very excited about that. And at work, if anyone showed any signs of having, you know, a fever of any description, you were sent home for 2 weeks. And you know, I had kids at the time. I still have kids, but you know, kids bring in a whole load of illnesses, and you know, every now and again you'll have a, you know, bit of a cold or a runny nose. And I was sent home for 2 weeks, and apparently people came round to my PC and, you know, wiped it down with all of the alcohol sprays and made sure I was decontaminated. So perhaps they're just waiting for those guys to come by and just to clean down the consoles.
Well, that could be. Okay, now, before we go into our final rating, if you've checked out Memory Alpha yet, I want to read something that it says. In Patrick Berry's original story, Beata was named Victoria, which I could care less about, and she imprisoned Riker after he directly addressed her and then touched her hand. Tasha Yar stunned Riker to prevent him from being killed and then took over command of the away team. In this version, Captain Picard was the only person aboard the Enterprise-D who was affected by the virus. The male slave started a revolution led by Lucas Jones, who was killed. I don't know about the revolution part, but I would have loved to have seen Tasha stun Riker and take over command of the away team. That, actually, I would have liked that one.
Well, I mean, what you're doing there, right? You're introducing a little bit of a... You're introducing a decision that Yar has to make for the greater good and potentially live with the consequences of.
Yeah.
I mean, the way it's set up at the moment is that there's really nothing... The people on the planet don't have to make a single choice. They just, you know, they go and find someone, they have a bit of a chat, they have a bit more of a chat, and then eventually someone makes the call that they're going to be exiled to a small, you know, deserted peninsula somewhere on the other side of the world, which apparently that's a better thing than having them exiled or, you know, or executed. I think, you know, having something that what you read out there sounds a little bit more interesting. And actually, the idea that Picard's the only guy that gets knocked out is, I think, realistic and believable. I mean, when Data is up on the Enterprise by himself, it does literally look like there's no one else there. Everyone else has been knocked out with the virus, and you're very much stretching the believability of how the starship would function, and you know, why there's, you know, why there are, you know, four senior guys on the away team just sitting there, and they don't get told about it until pretty late into the episode.
Right. I think we're done. So it's now time to give our final rating for this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being what it deserves and 5 being forget about it. You'll never see it in this one. My rating, of course, say it with me, James.
So it's going to be 1 out of 5.
1 out of 5. I hate the reverse chauvinism. I can't think we're ever this cruel to any woman on Earth. Maybe we were, but that the roles have reversed to this kind of an extreme. Anyway, so, you know, they are in control of every situation in the sea. They deserve the respect for their position comes, but they just go too far. This takes a whole notion of one sex being weaker than the other and intensifies it to an absurd extreme. And I kind of find that kind of offensive, really. It takes a prime directive and tweaks it to fit the moment, but then a few minutes later, like any knick-knack paddywhack, he gives a dog his bone, just after saying that they shouldn't do that. So anyway, here he beds the leader of the world and then tells her not to execute her citizens. strategic importance of this world escapes me. Why we would want these people as members of the Federation kind of like, ugh, makes me sick. So anyway, what would the two sexes do for the Federation? The women would want power and the men would be too weak to fight. What good would it be? So these are just too far-fetched, and therefore I've got to give this my... I think this is my first one.
I think you're right. I think it is your first one. I think it's my third one. So I've been more harsh than you are, which is strange because I came in, you know, declaring myself to be a complete apologist for all of the TNG.
Right.
This isn't. I mean, as I mentioned, I think this is a 1 out of 5. I think if this is a bad episode of Star Trek, I don't think we learn anything particularly. I think the situation we're placed in is silly. I'm all in favor of having a story about, the ills of, the ills of sexism and misogyny. That's absolutely fine. That's not the issue here. The issue here is that this is just poor. I think it's really weird the way Riker ends up in bed with the leader of the planet. I don't know why that's necessary. I don't know why even any of the virus storyline is necessary. This one's completely forgettable. So yeah, 1 out of 5 for me.
Deleted.
Deleted.
Okay.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation, the crew docks at a starbase for repairs.
I'm getting an indication of possible trouble in main engineering.
But kidnappers trick the crew into an emergency evacuation.
Abandon ship!
Stealing the Enterprise and its captain.
But this vessel must not fall into hostile hands.
Set auto-destruct sequence. Now.
It's a deadly countdown to disaster on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Join us next week when we review Season 1, Episode 15, and that is 1100101.
Or, actually, since O is a letter and not a number, he meant to say 11001001.
Yes.
And a teacher never let me get away with that. O is a letter, not a number. Do it again.
Yes, I think the episode's IIOOIOOI.
Yeah, okay, could be. I don't know, but it's an interesting how they come up with that name. We'll talk about that next week. Thank you, everyone, for downloading the show. We really appreciate you being there. And don't forget, when you give feedback for this episode, give us your rating on a scale of 1 to 5. I can't wait to see how you guys rate this one. And sorry, Baker. Even if you were here, it wouldn't have been any better.
Okay, I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. I'm sorry we did this to you guys. We apologize. Good night.